This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
From the unexplained to the mundane, come join us on a journey to the fringe. Hello and welcome to Journey to the Fringe, which, Chelsea, unfortunately, we share an acronym now with the Joint Terrorism Task Force in the U.S., for which we might actually be on that list. So, I don't know. That's kind of awkward.
That is awkward.
But here we are in this world that we inhabit. We are your podcast hosts, Taylor and Chelsea. Here today, yes, those are the exact people I was thinking of. I got Chelsea. I really like... They just have a flamboyance to them.
It's the unbuttoned shirt. It's fabulous.
We are here today to follow up and bring us into the spooky season. And of course, as we get closer to the spooky season, we are going to be talking about the spooky encounters. Now, Chelsea and I have picked only the ripest cryptid encounters to go over. I'm not actually sure. Chelsea tried to text me about how we're going to split this up, and I refused to answer, as that would restrict the creativity.
It's true. He didn't answer me.
That is, of course, our normal interactions, but...
It's true.
It's how it worked here. Anyhow, I got a couple cryptids to go over with you guys. Chelsea's got a couple cryptids to go over with you guys with these freaky encounters. And Chelsea, I'm going to start us off with the Tuttle Bottom Monster.
Oh, that sounds adorable.
I know. I love that name.
Yeah, it sounds nice. Someone ought to make a children's book about it.
Somebody ought to ask an AI to do that for them. Anyhow, I just need to say this. If you're out there listening to us and you're a cryptid looking to make a bang with society, you got to pick the place that you're getting your encounters, because 9 times out of 10 you're going to be named after where your encounter happens. And Chelsea, this encounter happens in Tuttle Bottom, Illinois.
Oh, okay. I was just going to ask if it was in Bottom somewhere. I guess Tuttle Bottom makes sense.
You also got to market it right, so it's not a place where there's another more popular cryptid. You want to be super famous, so it's probably somewhere you need. Point Pleasant, for instance. You want famous.
But you don't want too famous of a place, because there's no way you're ever going to get a New York monster.
No, exactly. Exactly. Horror. You don't need a famous place. You want a no-name place where you explode them to popularity and therefore everyone comes to see you. That's what you want.
Yeah, and you basically are going to get a festival no matter what.
You're going to get a festival. You're going to get a bunch of... All the restaurants are going to be named after you. They're going to make pizzas in your likeness. There's going to be festivals. There's going to be all sorts of crazy shit, just with like statues. That list goes on and on.
Now, our story of the Tuttle Bottom Monster starts on August 6, 1963, a hot summer night,
where a young man
armed with a rifle was out near Tuttle Bottoms, a swampy stretch of the land just north of Harrisburg, Illinois. It was around 11 p.m. when he saw what he described as an 8-foot-long, 4-foot-high creature covered in coarse hair and most notably sporting a long anteater-like snout.
Oh, he sounds adorable.
Wasn't a bear, wasn't a dog, and it's the Tuttle Bottom. Love it.
I am already a big fan. Is it an anteater?
Finish the story off.
Okay.
The young man reported the sighting to Saline County Sheriff James L. Thompson. According to the Harrisburg Daily Register, Thompson found the youth and later dispersed a group of about a dozen armed boys who had gathered to hunt the creature. This is not a campfire story. It was serious enough for law enforcement to intervene, and it wouldn't be the last time. There is a surge of sightings of this thing in the 60s. Throughout this decade, sightings of the Tuttle Bottom Monster surged. Teenagers parked near the bottoms reported seeing a hairy creature approach their cars. Hunters claim to hear strange growls and catch glimpses of something large moving through the brush. Descriptions varied slightly. Some said it walked on two legs, others on four, but one detail remained consistent: long, narrow, and unnatural snout. Police received multiple calls. Officers always responded. While no physical evidence was ever recovered, the consistency of the reports kept the legend alive, and then came the rumors. Some locals whispered that murders had occurred in the area, grisly, unsolved, and possibly linked to the creature. No official connection was ever made, but the fear was real. By the 1980s, the Tuttle Bottom Monster had become a fixture of Harrisburg folklore, but it wasn't just stories passed around a dinner table or campfires. Former Harrisburg Police Chief Gary Crabtree later stated that his department received approximately 50 reports over 28 years. That's 50 reports. That's not a myth. That's a pattern. Witnesses concluded couples parked near the bottoms, hunters deep in the woods, residents walking dogs or driving home at late at night. Each described a large, hairy creature with a snout. Some said it watched them, others said it fled, but none forgot what they saw. Police often responded to these calls. Sometimes they found disturbed brush, strange tracks, or shaken witnesses. Other times, nothing. But the reports kept coming. One of the most provocative claims came from the local resident Virgil Smith. Smith believed the creature was real and that it had been released by the federal government. He claimed a former USDA employee told him the department had conducted a private investigation into the monster. No documentation has ever surfaced to support this. But in cryptid lore, government secrecy is part of the mystique. So was it an experiment gone wrong, or just a story that grew with the telling? Sightings continue even into the 21st century, with locals still reporting strange encounters near the bottoms. One man claimed he saw the creature cross the road in front of his truck, walking upright with a snout and glowing eyes. Another described hearing guttural growls while fishing, followed by a splash and a glimpse of fur. Police still respond to these calls, and while no formal investigations were launched, the reports were logged and legends endured. And the most recent sightings even happened in the 2020s, Chelsea.
Okay.
A Harrisburg resident walking his dog near the bottoms reported seeing a large hairy figure watching him from the tree line. He described it as about 7 feet tall, with a long snout and dark fur. The creature didn't move, it just stared. The man called the police, who arrived and searched the area. They found broken branches and disturbed ground, but no creature. And the report was filed and the mystery deepened. What is the Tuttle Bottoms Monster? There are theories out there, such as a misidentified bear or boar, an undiscovered species, cryptid unique to South Illinois, or some believe a supernatural entity tied to the land itself. The anteater-like snout sets it apart from other North American cryptids. Not a Bigfoot, not a dogman, something else. And despite decades of sightings, no clear photos, video, or physical evidence has surfaced. Now, the Tuttle Bottom Monster may not have the fame of Mothman or Bigfoot, actually pretty much anything that we've covered so far, but in Harrisburg, it's part of the landscape, a story passed down through generations, a warning whispered to teens heading out to the bottoms at night. And for those who've seen it, it's not a joke, it's not a myth, it's very real.
Yeah, I believe that about anteaters.
I mean, to be fair, there are no 7 foot tall anteaters out there.
Are they not? They're pretty big.
They can be big, but they don't live for 60 years.
Yeah, but they could have families. And families generally just keep living.
That's the thing about anteaters. They don't generally reside in South Illinois.
Hold on. No. Wild anteaters do not live in Illinois. Have anteaters escaped from zoos in Illinois?
Apparently, the giant anteater can be up to 7 feet long. So if he stands up, he could...
They're pretty big. And I
includes tail, too.
Yeah. And if they probably got caught in the headlights, I bet their eyes would glow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow, that's...
Halloween episodes are not for disproving. They're for telling the stories of creepy things.
I'm sorry. I Googled the renditions of what they look like, and they all look exactly like anteaters. Sorry. I had to. Okay.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
I have two episodes ready to go, and I was waiting to see what you were leading with, to see what one I was going to cover in this episode. So I'm going with the conversation that we had at the beginning of the episode on if you're a cryptid paranormal creature, you got to pick where you pop up. It determines your future as a paranormal cryptid. With that being said, my cryptid that I chose to do is the Nain Rouge. Have you heard of the Nain Rouge?
I've heard of Moulin Rouge.
Really? Okay, so this is the Red Devil of Detroit. I thought you might have heard of him, being that you've been to Detroit.
I've heard of Nain Rouge, yes.
Yeah, maybe I'm saying him wrong.
Yes, I definitely have heard of it.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about him because he represents Detroit. Whether or not you heard of him, another thing, and that goes to where you pick the city you're going to haunt. Maybe Detroit was too big.
There's a brewery named after it in Detroit.
There is, yeah. Super big in Detroit, apparently. The legend of the Nain Rouge weaves a tale from the early days when Detroit was founded by Antoine de la Mothe Cadillac in the 1700s. While attending a party in Quebec, a fortune teller warned Cadillac of a future encounter with the Nain on his next adventure. She stated Cadillac needed to appease the monster with flattery, and his reward would be discovering a city that would rival ones in France. If he respected the fiend, misfortune would darken his life. Cadillac sailed out on his mission the next day and eventually established Fort Pontchartrain du Detroit in the western bank of Detroit River. The fort prospered for years until one night someone spotted the Nain Rouge. When Cadillac ran into the Scarlet Imp, instead of paying him respect, he smacked the monster with his cane and told him to leave the city. The Nain Rouge's cackling laughter pierced the air as the demon slipped away into the inky darkness, and doom shrouded the arrogant Cadillac. His superiors removed the founder from his illustrious post and shipped him to Louisiana, as they did with the French back then, which he considered a wretched place to live with his family. I guess that explains a lot about what happened to Detroit.
Was it a wretched place to live, or was it a wretched place to live with his family?
Yes.
The place or both. The family that was
there? Why not both?
Okay.
The Nain Rouge was included in Charles M. Skinner's 1896 book, Myths and Legends of Our Land, described as, quote, a shambling red-faced creature with a cold, glittering eye and teeth protruding from a grinning mouth, end quote. Legend holds the Nain Rouge's appearance would precede terrible events for the white people of the city and foretell success for the indigenous people. The creature is said to have appeared on July 30th, 1963, before the Battle of Bloody Run, where 58 British soldiers were killed by Native Americans from Chief Pontiac's Ottawa tribe. Supposedly, the Nain Rouge danced among the corpses on the banks of the Detroit River after the battle, and the river turned red with blood for days after. According to the tale, all the misfortunes of Governor and General William Hull, leading to the surrender of Detroit in the War of 1812, are blamed on the Nain Rouge. We then have the 1805 fire, and several sightings were later reported during the 20th century. Two utility workers claimed to have seen the creature just before the 1967 Detroit riots, and supposedly it was also seen before an ice storm in 1976. This has led to a supposedly 300-year annual tradition on the Sunday after the vernal equinox, where Detroiters gather for a march to meet the Nain Rouge. There are no records to indicate that the legend of the Nain Rouge existed in the 18th century, when Antoine de la Lamothe Cadillac was the authority in Detroit. The earliest record, Hamlin's Legends of Les Detroit, is probably not how you say that in French, but was it? There's an accent on it. Detroit wasn't published until 1883. 180 years after Cadillac was said to have been cursed by the Nain Rouge. However, some claim that it originates in the early 1700s French settlement of Detroit, supposedly deriving from Norman French tales of the Lutin, a type of hobgoblin. Some also claim that the Nain Rouge originated with supposed Native American legends of an impish offspring of the stone god. And that is the Nain Rouge, and that is why you should always trust the devil.
I actually learned about this on a ghost tour I did in Detroit. I always loved this portion of the story. So like whenever you're learning about history in Detroit, a lot of car names come up. So obviously Cadillac ends up getting his name dropped into a car as Pontiac, hilariously enough, with the tribe that destroyed them. Cadillac, his family crest ends up being the logo for the Cadillac.
What?
Yeah, that's like when you look at a Cadillac, the logo for a Cadillac, that's his family crest. Also, he lied. That's not a real family crest. He made it up to say that he had a familial ancestry that didn't exist.
That's the good thing about ghost tours. They always give you a really great history of the goings-ons of wherever you're visiting as well, unless you're doing a ghost tour in Barcelona, in which case don't do a ghost tour in Barcelona because you won't learn anything. But it'll be run by a guy from San Francisco. Yeah. That is neither here nor there. Do you have anything to add to the Nain Rouge then? Perhaps how you really say the name?
The Nain Rouge, which also does have a brewery, which we are unable to attend, unfortunately, because it's closed when we walked by.
Mm.
We did still get points on the Detroit Brewery Trail from it because they had a discount code, which I could use.
Oh, good. An important part of the story. Do you have another creature for us,
Dave? I do, Chelsea. And this is somewhat keeping with the region that we're in, but not really. For Chelsea, we are going to look at...
I'm intrigued.
...the Hubei Flying Entity.
Oh.
Which, yes, Hubei is nowhere near where we're talking about.
Never heard of it.
Hubei Province, China.
Closed. What are you talking about?
But I got an Illinois theme going on. And what do we know Illinois for, Chelsea?
Pizza. Chicago. Mothman.
There we go. Hubei Flying Entity.
Oh my god. And also, the place that he picked was Hubei, and he is named after it. The second less scary theme of the episode.
This is a winged humanoid reported in remote regions of Hubei province, also where the Yareng comes from.
Oh.
Often appearing before disasters or in moments of high strangeness. The first sighting on record is in Badong County, July of 1998. In this first documented account, which Badong County is in western Hubei province, it happens in early July of 1998. Multiple villagers reported seeing a large winged figure flying over a valley near their homes. They described it as 2.5 meters tall, or about 8 feet, covered in dark, leathery skin or fur, possessed a wingspan of roughly 3 to 4 meters, eyes reportedly glowed red in low light, and flight was silent with no flapping or sound, just a gliding motion. Now, witnesses claimed the creature hovered over the valley for several minutes before vanishing into the mist.
No.
3 days later, a landslide struck the area, killing several residents and damaging infrastructure. While no formal investigation was launched, the timing of the sighting led locals to associate the entity with the disaster. The next notable sighting is in Shenongjia Forest Reserve on August of 2002. This particular forest reserve is known for the Yaren. A group of university students from Wuhan were hiking deep in the reserve when they witnessed a humanoid figure gliding between treetops at dusk. They estimated it to be 7 to 8 feet tall, wings described as bat-like, extending from shoulders to ankles, no visible feathers. They noted a membranous texture, like a bat. Eyes or chest emitted a faint glow and moved movement was smooth and deliberate, not bird-like. The group reported the incident to park rangers, who dismissed it as a large bird or misidentification. However, the students maintained their account and later published a brief summary in a university newsletter, which was picked up by fringe cryptid blogs. Now, the third and final major account comes from Yichang City near the Three Gorges Dam. In October of 2009, a bridge maintenance crew working at night shift reported seeing a humanoid figure perched on a support beam. Witnesses described the figure as man-sized, hunched, with elongated limbs, wings folded tightly against his body, resembling a cloak. When it approached the entity, turned its head, revealing glowing yellow eyes. It then leaped into the air and glided across the river, disappearing into the fog. The crew reported the sighting to their supervisor, who advised discretion. Rumors spread among the local workers, and several refused to take night shifts in the following weeks. Now, across all these sightings, we get a few things that are fairly consistent. At least 7 to 8 feet tall, leathery bat-like wings, glowing eyes or chest, silent flight, appearance in a remote or industrial area, and while no formal police reports exist that I could find, because let's face it, I'm not going to pull up some Chinese police reports. These accounts have circulated in regional folklore and online cryptid communities. The Hubei flying entity remains one of China's most mysterious winged apparitions, part omen, part enigma. So is it a cryptid, a spirit, a warning? We may never know, but the consistency of these sightings suggests something is out there watching from the skies above Hubei.
Oh, that was a good one. I really like that.
I think we do need to do an episode on Mothmen of the World, because that was not the only one I could find.
I've actually never heard of this guy, but I do know there are spots that it has popped up as well. I would be all over that. Big fan of Mothman. He's my favorite guy. My number one.
And do you have another one, or is this where we're going to cut it for this one?
I have another one. My next one is the Ozark Howler, which I didn't take this international for my second one. I stayed very much in the United States in the Ozark.
But you moved south.
I don't know what an Ozark is. All I know is that the dad from Arrested Development is in it.
Yeah, he's in that show called The Ozarks. It's a group of lakes.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Is it?
It's the Ozark Mountains or Ozark Plateau. It's a physiographic region in central southern U.S., primarily Missouri, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and a small part of Kansas.
I couldn't get into the show, so I wouldn't know. So this is a phantom creature of the Arkansas hills. Again, my geography of the United States is a little bit sketchy, especially when you get to the middle parts.
Ain't nobody remember in the middle, unless you're in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. It's tough. There's so much.
When you have 50, you're gonna lose a bunch that are right together. That's just how it's gonna work.
Oh yeah. Okay, so the Ozark Howler, or the Ozark Black Howler, or the Devil Cat legend, has been passed down for generations by locals who have heard and seen things that they could not describe. As an animal that you would expect to find in the heart of the Ozark wilderness, its frightening sound and eerie appearance have been seen in the more remote parts of the Missourian and Arkansas Ozarks, and even farther west in Oklahoma and south in Texas. Sightings have been officially recorded since the 1950s, though many Ozark families have stories passed down through generations of seeing the Ozark Howler well before that time. The origin of the Ozark Howler legend is not clear, but some sources suggest that it may have Native American roots. According to one story, the howler was a spirit animal that protected the land from invaders. Another claims that the howler is a curse placed on the region by a witch who was burned at the stake by European settlers. Some believe that the howler is a manifestation of the fears and hardships that the early pioneers faced in the wilderness. The legend gained more popularity in the 1990s when a cryptozoologist named Chad Arment published a book called Cryptozoology, Science and Speculation, which
I like the term speculation being put in the title. It's good.
It's quite a nice word when it comes to science. The book included a chapter on the Ozark Howler. Arment claimed that he had collected dozens of eyewitness accounts and physical evidence of the creature's existence. He also speculated that the howler might be a new species of felide or canid or hybrid or both. Between 2005 and 2010, the howler was spotted several times, and in 2015, the legend received more attention when a local television station in Arkansas reported that they had received photographs of the creature from a viewer. The station contacted the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, who dismissed the photos as a hoax. However, some people still believe that the photos were genuine and that they showed proof of the howler's reality. I bet you're wondering what he looks like because I didn't start with that. Let's talk about the description of what you would be seeing if you spotted the Ozark howler. Just in case, maybe you've already seen him. Maybe you're sitting next to him on a bus. I don't know. Anything could happen. It's a Halloween episode. So if you're sitting on a bus, listen up. The Ozark howler is typically described as being around the size of a bear, with thick boy stocky legs, black shaggy hair, and having prominent horns. Most agree that is either black or dark in color. Some witnesses also report seeing glowing red eyes, long fangs, and a long tail. The most distinctive feature of the howler is its sound, which is said to be a combination of a wolf's howl and an elk's bugle. I didn't know that's what you would call it. Some people also compare it to the screams of a woman or a half-human creature. The howl is said to be very loud and terrifying and can be heard for miles.
So is that not just the sound of a cougar?
Yeah, it could be.
Very humanly scream.
Yeah, it's true. There's a lot of animals that have really creepy voices if you were to hear them at night, like owls, cougars. Yeah, that's another creepy one I wouldn't want to hear at night. I wouldn't want to hear a lot of noises at night, if I was to be honest with you. There's that one bird that mimics, and it's like
the firebird,
like a chainsaw. Yeah, he's a good one I wouldn't want to hear at night, because who, like parrots that learn how to talk, wouldn't want to hear one of those guys at night, depending on what they had to say. Bigfoot, wouldn't want to hear him at night. So there's lots of stuff that I don't know why I'm talking about the animals I don't want to hear at night. The Ozark howler is said to be nocturnal and elusive, preferring to stay in the dense forest and caves of the Ozarks. It is also said to be territorial and aggressive, especially during mating season or when protecting its young. Some stories claim that the howler can kill livestock and even humans with its powerful jaws and claws. It's just describing another. I hate to be this person on this episode, but it just sounds like any other like wild animal in the woods.
Yeah, maybe a dark-haired cougar.
Yeah, maybe an anteater. Others say that it could cause bad luck or misfortune to those who see it or hear it. Let's talk about sightings of the Ozark howler. There have been many of them. As I already talked about, then I talked about what it looks like. Now I'm back to the reportings. Mostly from hunters, hikers, campers, and residents who live near the woods. Some of these sightings are more credible than others, but they all share some common elements. Here are some examples of notable sightings. October 2014, a motorist in Benton County, Arkansas, reported that he nearly collided with an unidentified animal on Pump Station Road in Springdale. He described it as bear-sized, gray, fast-running animal with horns. In December 2015, a viewer sent photos to 4029 News in Arkansas, claiming that they showed images of the Ozark howler near Devil's Den State Park. The photo showed a dark animal with horns and red eyes hiding behind some trees. Nothing comes up if I search this. Well, maybe we'll throw it up if we find it. Otherwise, we'll just generate an AI image of it. In June 2016, a group of friends camping near Lake Tenkiller in Oklahoma claimed that they heard loud howls and saw glowing eyes in the dark. They also found large paw prints and scratch marks on their car. In August 2017, a couple hiking near Branson in Missouri said that they saw a large black animal with horns crossing a road, and they said that it looked like a cross between a bear and a goat. In October 2018, a hunter in Texas reported that he shot and killed an animal that he believed was an Ozark howler near Big Thicket National Preserve. He said that it had black fur, horns, fangs, and red eyes. He took photos of his trophy and sent them to the local newspaper. That's the Ozark howler. Lots of weird names of places in that, by the way. That was a well-rounded episode, and I'm not sure what the theme was, actually. It was probably about cryptids and where their names come from?
Yeah, except the Nin Rouge doesn't quite fit in there, but that's okay.
It does. Not where his name comes from, but where a cryptid chooses to his stomp. Origins yeah. from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess with that, I have been Taylor, here with Chelsea. We are Journey to the Fringe. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Journey to the Fringe. If you have liked what you have listened to, please like, share, subscribe, or follow, depending on what venue you are listening to us through. Also, please, if possible, leave a 5-star review, as that really helps us in the algorithms. Should you wish to interact with us, please check us out on your social media of choice. I bet you we are there. And if you really want to communicate with us and give us ideas for new episodes or tell us that we're wrong and terrible, either way, please send us an email at journeytothefringe@gmail.com. For now, I'll see you in the next episode.